time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
And if you're going to have a football league with 64 teams, you're going to have a bunch of teams that go 1-11.
Pete Thamel.
They doubled down again and again and again and lost and lost and lost and lost. And now they're like dragging out of the casino at 7 a.m. Trying to start their retirement account again, like one penny at a time.
With SI's Pat Forty.
I'm going to be fairly judicious with the old 7-Eleven sushi.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. I believe this is the first intercontinental pod we've ever done.
You can even say interplanetary because I'm in Hoover, Alabama.
Pete is at the courtyard in Hoover and he's bragging about his palatial room and I can't argue with him.
First of all, I'm not bragging about anything about the courtyard in Hoover, but compared to the closets you guys have been locked in.
No,
for
we have
weeks.
No closets. We have no closets.
Okay, sorry. Sorry.
Yeah. The closetless.
That's because you're in it.
I'm worried. Yes. We are the closet. I don't ask for a ton, but like if you're going to be somewhere for 3 weeks, like somewhere to put your clothes, some little drawer. It's a small room. 121 square feet over here, I think. 11 by 11. But I'm not sure it's even that. That counts the bathroom, by the way. But that's our.
Right there with you.
Yeah. So anyway, Pat and I made it. There was a lot of concern on Twitter on our trip. How drunk were we? Was there enough? We did have some pre-flight cocktails at the Fountain Bar at the Detroit Metro Airport. A couple of Pat's coworkers from Sports Illustrated came by and seemed a little aghast, a little taken aback. Maybe not surprised.
They weren't down with the 11 a.m. Beer pour.
Yeah. They later complained that they didn't sleep on the plane. And I knocked out for a while. That's why you do it.
Exactly.
What I've learned the last 48 hours, if anyone hosts a podcast that analyzes Detroit airport bars, Dan would be a really good guest. I flew through Detroit to go home on Sunday and I sent a picture from the place I was eating a salad at 11 a.m. And Dan was like, oh, that's Plum Market. Da-da-da-da. Like, you know, say hi to Andrea and Bill, the bartenders.
I got a good signature drink from the Fountain Bar today.
We did.
Yeah, I said, what do you drink at 10:30 in the morning when you're about to get on a flight for 14 hours? And I mean, if anyone would know, it's the bartender at the International Gates. The real development was there were only 34 people on our flight. Delta took a beating on this one.
Oh,
the plane sat 300-400. I don't know. A lot. I got upgraded to the palatial Delta One suite. Pat was in limited recline 83E, I believe, where he belonged.
And Pat's probably, for our listeners, what, 4 inches taller than you, Dan?
At least. And he was trying to, it's fine back here. There's not that many people on the plane. This is great. Well, I was up there having champagne and strawberries.
For the record, you came out of there saying it was actually too confining in your, like, lay down bed thing.
They have too much stuff. There's a little too much stuff. I needed a more simplified pod up front. Yeah, it's got the lay flat bed, little comforter. Oh, life was good.
The picture of the slippers to the group text is really a nice touch.
They give you slippers. Delta slippers.
I got slippers too. There was too much stuff. Like I had slippers, headphones, pillow, this, that. I didn't even see the slippers until we were like halfway over Alaska.
We flew by Denali. Did you see that? Were you awake for that?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. Got a good view of that.
Do you watch any movies? Like 14 hours is a long time.
Yeah, I wrote a 2,500 word magazine story and watched Citizen Kane and slept all three.
I watched Gran Torino and I tried to watch Nomadland. That was the boringest movie ever. I quit that one. You ever heard of that movie? It sucks.
Chuck Culpepper loves it. I have not seen it.
I mean, I like Chuck, but what? No.
What are you drinking, Pat? What Japanese concoction is that?
Premium Yabisu beer.
Where'd you get the beer?
To see, I'm living large over here. Let's go through the TikTok here. Let's give them the TikTok, okay? Given them the drinks in the airport. We've given them your luxury.
Let's spend more time talking about my luxury flight and yours not luxury flight. Now, we will get to some college football, but yeah. So we do get to Japan, and I'm going to tell you what. Based on my experience today with the COVID protocols, testing situation, and general organization of this operation, if there was a BetMGM line on this, it would be -10,000 that this will turn into a complete and utter show. If I got COVID, it's because of what the Japanese government made me do today to not get COVID.
Yeah.
It took over 5 hours to get from the airport through the airport and to my hotel. That's how long the process is. I don't even know how to describe it, Pat. I think I showed 30 different people my passport today.
Oh.
It's checkpoint after checkpoint.
And you have this sheaf of papers that just keeps getting larger and larger and larger as you collect paperwork and fill out paperwork. But the biggest, yeah, to Dan's point, they are herding hundreds and hundreds of people through this maze of lines.
Like Disney World.
And there's no social distancing whatsoever. Like, if the German national team has an outbreak, Dan and I are done.
The Germans do not hold their space.
Oh, no.
Their basketball team must be terrible. No spacing. They're right on top of you. I'm like, listen, dude, it's your Olympics. I'm trying to get thrown out of here.
But that's the thing. They're so uptight about all this stuff, and then there's no social distancing whatsoever. It's just like, just cattle call them through. And then at the very end of the gauntlet, I don't want to get too far ahead here, but we are packed onto a bus of about 45 people and taken to the transportation mall where we're going to get taxis to our hotels. The guy gets on there and says very earnestly, to keep everybody safe, one person per taxi. And so, like, me and my SI coworkers are all staying at the same hotel, but he makes us go one at a time in one taxi each to then take the taxis all to the same place after we've all been on the bus crammed in together.
Yeah, he so announces to no a bus of 45 people that we can't have more than one in a taxi.
That cab company's living large tonight, baby, with those kickbacks.
Yeah, there is they took care of some government official in Japan for that system. I mean, I don't even know what to say. I mean, you go and there's a desk and there's another desk and there's just this endless parade of workers, and you got to spit in a thing and get a COVID test. And then you wait for the COVID test, and then you got to fill out a form about the test. Then you got to wait in another line to get it's just incredible. People got 6 hours in that line.
Yeah.
My favorite was they had a thing you had to fill out, and it said, I have it right here. Have you been to any of the following regions in the past 14 days? Asia, Europe, Africa, Middle East, North America, Latin America and the Caribbean, Oceania. It was not on the list. I mean, that's pretty much 80% of the world. If you've been to any of, yes, I am a resident of Earth. what is this form going to do? Pete just made it through SEC Media Day security and it's got nothing.
My only travel anecdote is I walked in and I said, you know, where do you pick up the credentials? And they said, go down Radio Row to your right. And I went down Radio Row to my right and there was a Belk. And I was like, well, I'm at SEC Media Days.
Oh, yeah. The Belk at the Winfrey Mall. Yeah.
Got to be 1,000 workers at the airport, including this one woman who I thought she had the best job. At the end, she waves a sign around with pictures of like bacon and ham and fruit. And stops everyone to say, do you have any of this in your bag? You have to declare it. That's her job.
She was the meat lady.
She's the meat and fruit lady. She's got this big sign. And then she actually snags someone, was so excited. This guy handed over like a pastrami sandwich or something. I don't know what. Italian sub. And she took it and ran down. And you know, all the workers are excited. They had lunch. This poor guy.
It's like the Japanese version of UTEP night at the Slippery Noodle.
Like, what do you do? Oh, I'm working at the airport. What's your job? I'm the meat and fruit lady. I harass bleary-eyed international travelers and make sure they don't sneak an Italian sub into the country.
Because we figured that was kind of a low end of the totem pole job there, the meat and fruit lady.
Yeah, I think she was hoping to move up. to something more friendly. You know, at least be the one that points to the Delta baggage.
Yeah, right.
Our best move, though, was stop drinking on the plane after a little while, because if he gotten drunk a second time on the flight, that gauntlet would have been unbelievable.
Do you have like last call?
My last call was with the first meal. But what did you have for dinner, Dan Wetzel?
They were carving up steaks, Kobe beef. And
yeah, they were. No, oh, no. When you got to the hotel.
No, Uber Eats. Got Uber Eats. It's got some tacos.
How was it? Like just the efficiency and all that stuff.
So. Yeah, pretty normal. Yeah, dude showed up, looked like the Uber guy from home. Just had a bag of tacos. Had three tacos. So I was pretty happy.
I went to the 7-Eleven down the block. And let me tell you.
Is that contraband? Can you do that?
No, you can. Yes, we are allowed to go to the 7-Eleven.
Oh.
Okay. Oh.
Taqueritos.
Yes, my 7-Eleven is a little different here. Shark fin soup and like 9 million things to microwave, where, of course, we have no microwave in our hotel. I mean, maybe there's one down in the lobby here, but there's not one here. So I ended up with some sliced ham, some crackers, some cherry tomatoes, and two Japanese beers.
Well, that's not bad. All right, so we solved the alcohol problem.
So you couldn't get the shark fin soup because you couldn't heat it up? That was your obstacle.
Yeah, well, I probably wasn't going to get it anyway.
I did buy something at the airport, some kind of sandwich. I opened it and that just threw it away. I didn't eat it. So, all right.
Did they have gas station sushi? Like, is like 7-Eleven have sushi?
There was like some rolls at the 7-Eleven, but I don't know.
Yeah, I got to do it.
Yeah, it was like 7 p.m. and those were probably rolled at like 7 a.m. I don't know. I'm going to be fairly judicious with the old 7-Eleven sushi.
All right. Anyway, we made it. So Pat apparently has solved the alcohol problem. I have not, but I'll sneak into his 7-Eleven.
Not only we got 7-Eleven with a ton of beer, but we also have vending machines on the on my floor with beer.
What the hell kind of deal you got going on over there?
It's why he left our little website for that big New York City magazine, Dan.
Man. Well, I'm glad I lapped up the luxury on the flight. Pete, what happened at SEC Media Day?
So this is my first SEC Media Day, and
Paul,
it is tamped down version of what I was told is the normal SEC Media Day. Radio Row is about a third of the size, and you know, just COVID protocols, all that stuff. It is not an event designed for reporters. It is an event designed for the SEC network to televise SEC Media Day. And the reporters are just sort of hustled into a room and put in their little box. So Dan Mullen trotted out yesterday after Greg Sankey. So Greg Sankey led off, Dan Mullen, Coach O, and then Shane Beamer. Shane Beamer had been waiting his whole life to give the SEC Media Day speech. Like, he name checked like the cameraman on the SEC network. He name checked like his wife had been a Mississippi State intern who worked at media. Like, he went through the whole, he didn't just thank the commissioner, he thanked the associate commissioners. It was pretty funny. Since you've left the country, some things have happened. There's been some increasing momentum for NCAA breakaway, kind of the chatter that began, a few months ago at the NCAA tournament has increased. Mark Emmert came out this week and basically said, the NCAA is useless. It sort of said what we all knew, because he knew at Media Days everyone was going to declare the NCAA useless, so he got out ahead of it. Dennis Dodd and Ross Dellinger both wrote good stories filled with, like, your typical pissed off administrators quotes at the NCAA, which, like, we've sort of been hearing for a while, but post-Supreme Court ruling have become a little bit more real. Yeah, a lot of playoff chatter. I mean, it's a Media Day, right? Like,
the breakaway. What are we talking? Are we talking Division I from everyone else? Are we talking Power Five from? I mean, I've yet to hear how this thing works that makes any sense.
Yeah, nobody like handed me a model, but I would think that it becomes some version of football breaks away from everything. That's how I've interpreted it. And again, this could be radically different because the leagues may not want to do it. The simplest version is Power Five football plus a handful go and start their own world, and then everything else falls under an umbrella. And that way you don't lose the NCAA tournament basketball contract. And I really think that the biggest obstacles to some kind of breakaway have always been the NCAA tournament just in leaving its normal form, and it's been politics. If Indiana leaves, Notre Dame leaves, or really more Indiana, Ball State and Indiana State get pissed and sue them, and politicians get in the way. The same way that the Pac-12 expansion got blown up when they wanted Texas and Oklahoma, and the same way that Virginia Tech got wedged into the ACC back in the day. Politics matter at that level when you go to boards and everything like that. So the noise has increased, really. That's really it.
All right. What is the benefit these guys are coming up with on why you would do just Power Five and, you know, whatever, Notre Dame and a few other? What's the benefit?
So the quote that from Ross's story, which was excellent on Pat's Big City Magazine website, SI.com, was basically like, we don't want some school at we don't want Binghamton dictating what Alabama does or whatever. We don't want some school up in the Northeast dictating what happens in Alabama. So they want more autonomy under the umbrella. And Emmert even said, like, the rules for field hockey shouldn't be the same as the rules for football. It's essentially further galvanizing what we've already known, is that football and basketball are their own two pods of money making. And then everything else is either a giant money loser or a moderate money loser. There are rare exceptions, but for the most part, those are the lines of delineation. So eventually the pressure points are building for some kind of breakaway on those lines.
How much does the Binghamton have any say now?
Binghamton has a huge say, Dan.
Yeah. As it should.
Their SWA is on a committee.
I hear these quotes and I'm like, what? Like what? What happened?
Where is those are like rally the base quotes. Like they should be given at like the hog call in Conway. We're not letting Binghamton push us around.
Yeah. These are just applause line.
Like those are very much rally the base quotes. Yes.
Where's Binghamton? What point do these small schools have any control over the big schools?
Well, they have a voice, and they're the point. Yeah, is they that lose they shouldn't every have any vote. Voice. Again, we've expressed, I think, on the pod, our faithful listeners will know, some skepticism to how this happens. But the volume is increasing. And look, it's talking season, right? So I will say this, like, Greg Sankey has long been dismayed by what's happening with the NCAA, in part because he's kind of a believer in the importance of the NCAA. Like, some people just dismiss the NCAA out of hand. Sankey's a compliance guy at heart, and he's a process guy at heart. And he's not like a guy who lets emotion lead his decision making. He's a very bright guy. And so I think, and he has called out, Pat, didn't you get like a leaked document from the SEC about a year ago where Sankey excoriated them for enforcement stuff?
I got a document.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if it was leaked or not. Sorry. I'm just trying to reveal your sources. I don't want the KGB to beat down that hotel room in Tokyo and take you away. But
yeah, I'm sure. But just... no, yes, it was Sankey going after, mostly after the NCAA enforcement.
Yeah. So Sankey's been mad for a while, and I think people are now like less afraid to say it out loud, because people have anonymously been crushing Emmert and the NCAA just for relentlessly for months. The funniest thing is, like, I'm still waiting for someone to defend Emmert. Like zero people have come out and said he's doing a swell job. Larry Scott would do that once in a while when he was there, because they were buddies. Emmert hired him. Michael Crow at Arizona State, the president, is sort of like an old Emmert guy from back in the day, because they were presidents together. But for the most part, the silence has been amazing. Like, it's like almost really hilarious that, you know, the 20-something people on the NCAA Board of Governors who unanimously gave him the contract extension. And I don't know if I can think of a more uniformly less popular leader in all of sports than Mark Emmert at this moment. And now that it's being said out loud more, and the prospect of breaking away is being said more, and even he's trying to redefine what the NCAA is, it's just becoming more and more apparent how impotent that organization is and how just drastically behind it's been. And then all their legal strategy was grounded in staying behind. And then all that has blown up so famously. And here they are at this really, really awkward crossroads. It's basically like they doubled down again and again and again and lost and lost and lost and lost. And now they're like dragging out of the casino at 7 a.m. trying to start their retirement account again, like one penny at a time. They're really in a fascinating position.
Yeah, I agree that it's as bad as I've ever seen it for the NCAA. I just still want to see somebody come up with a plan of what would take its place, or how you either, you know, how you drastically remake it or how you replace it. And I, you know, they are the easiest pinata to batter right now. They deserve it. But again, what takes its place? And until I see that, then I'm not still convinced. They're not yet convinced that we are done with the NCAA.
So Steve Berkowitz from USA Today does a great job with public records, public documents, sort of tracking the salaries and the bonuses. I mean, we give him a lot of credit for our Randy Edsall bonus fodder in the fall, which really is like the heart and soul of our podcast in a lot of ways. He did the digging yesterday. Mark Emmert credited with $2.9 million in total compensation for 2019 calendar year, the association's tax documents show. Base salary increase of over $175,000 compared to the amount reported in 2018. And he had made as much as $4 million, but I think there was like a one-time bump in there. Over its past six fiscal years, this is Berkowitz again, by Berkowitz on Twitter. Over its past six fiscal years, the NCAA has reported a total of $252 million in outside legal expenses and $69.1 million in legal cost insurance recoveries. NCAA had $67.7 million in legal fees during its 2020 fiscal year, its new tax return shows. The amount, according to a separate NCAA statement, includes an accrual of $34.8 million related to the Alston case. Think about those numbers. I mean, that is just like you bet on a terrible legal strategy and an antiquated notion. I'm just like, the lack of vision there is it's criminal is strong, but it's certainly an abdication of any kind of coherent leadership. Like 60 something million on legal fees.
Yeah. To just get drubbed by everyone. Just
pummeled. And to by not coming up with a solution that would have maybe found a compromise on your side, you've just lost the nut. All right. Look, no one, certainly not me, is gonna ever say Emmert did a good job. I like when Mark Emmert's had a conference, had a meeting with some reporters. Like, I have never been invited to that. my email never comes through on that one. Not that I'm surprised.
Yeah, the pod went 0-3 on that invite.
I am not going to defend him. The guy's horrible. His legal plan, absolutely stupid. His lines are stupid. He's ripped the whole thing off. He sucks. But I still don't get, and I know we've gone over this, but the fact they keep bringing it up, how the hell do you get rid of the NCAA? You just create another NCAA. Binghamton is not stopping Alabama from doing anything. Kent is not stopping Ohio State from doing anything. And if you're going to have a football league with 64 teams, you're going to have a bunch of teams that go 1-11. And unlike the National Football League, you don't get the number one recruit when you have the worst team. And if you're going to be down the bottom, how'd Penn State and Michigan like last season when they couldn't pad the old record? You are going to lose ticket sales. You are going to lose donations. You are going to get your ass kicked. It is a terrible idea to sit there and say, we're only going to play each other like a mini NFL. Would I like to watch it better? Hell yeah. Of course I would. I don't want to watch some of these games. But if you are an athletic department, I don't care if you're Alabama or on down. Does Alabama want to stake its deal on running that gauntlet that they just did last year and add a couple games? You're going to go 17-0 against only major college football every year? You're going to have in the NFL, you'll get empty stands. You'll get TV ratings lower because your team sucks. The only thing that keeps that operation rolling is the hope. The Bengals are going to get Joe Burrow. The Jaguars are going to get Trevor Lawrence. When you go 1-11 in college football, you get the worst recruits. And the team, the Patriots and the Chiefs, keep getting the top one. And the top eight of the top 10. What, this thing doesn't make any sense. This is what happens in college athletics. This is how they ended up with the BCS. This is how they defended amateurism. They there's no outside thinkers. They just repeat what the other ones say. How is this working?
There is a lot of short-sightedness. And again, that's what I said. Let me see the plan for how you replace the NCAA or how you break away or how you just become a Power Five. those games where they beat, you know, where Alabama beats Citadel and Clemson beats Presbyterian, and, you know, everybody plays those games. And we all complain about them from our standpoint, but here's what happens. You win 56-0, and everybody says, hey, we're pretty good. They don't, you know, they totally factor out the level of competition. They walk out of the stadium feeling excited. They see more of the players. They have reason to believe the backups are all good.
You get eight home games.
Yeah.
You don't get twice as many home games in the NFL. It's equal. Well, now we're going 17, but over a 2-year period, it's equal. This thing doesn't make any sense. Give me something. Tell me how you get through the politician stuff that Pete mentioned. Oh, Ohio State's just going to break away. I guess there's no state reps or senators in Akron, Kent, Bowling Green, Toledo, Cincinnati, Athens, Cleveland. Nobody represents those people. They'll just stand back and let you bankrupt all their schools. No problem, because we love the Buckeyes. It's not happening. This thing doesn't make... I don't get it. I beg the AD that thinks this... that can really tell me how this is going to work. If you're Purdue... if you are, you know, Mississippi State, you're one of these mid-level to lower level in your leagues, this is the worst idea to ever come down the pipe. You're done. You are done. You're going 2-10 for the next 10 years in this system. You can't rebuild like the NFL because the draft doesn't work that way. No good player is joining a 2-10 team. You rig the system, you go 7-5. Hey, look at us. We're in the Alamo Bowl.
Penn State, you know, is usually happy to start the season playing Temple, a MAC school, and maybe, you know, like a, I don't know, maybe a lower level AAC or what. And then going 3-0. Well, how'd they start this last year, starting against the Big Ten? They were 0-4 to start. You know what?
No one's coming in November when you're 0-4, baby. They're not making that drive to State College. They're not spending three nights there. Saturday night, whiteout. You ain't gonna get 110,000 in there when you start 0-4. It doesn't work that way. NFL stadiums are in big, huge cities with tons of people. And they still don't sell out. If the Eagles aren't any good, they don't sell out. You can walk. There's hundreds of thousands of people who could walk to the Eagles games, let alone take the train. They don't have to drive. And you wouldn't get, I mean, it's just, this thing makes zero sense. I know I don't even get this concept. We're breaking away. Okay. Then what are you going to do? Well, we'll create an organization that oversees the rules and enforces the rules and runs the championships and all that. Well, that's the NCAA.
Yeah.
So you're going to create something. What are you going to call it? The BCS turned into a college football playoff and it's the same guys running it. So it's like, oh, okay.
And then you have to get the SEC to agree with the Big Ten, which recently has not been easy to get to agree with the Big 12, to agree with the Pac-12, to agree with the ACC.
I don't know who this is good for.
So have you seen the quotes? And again, you guys have been drinking on an airplane for the past 24 hours, but the Bowlesby quotes from Big 12 Media Day, where he's basically indicated it starts to become dangerous if the conferences start dictating their own rules. He called it a race to the bottom. Which was just kind of interesting. Like,
right.
Certainly this would all be great pod fodder, by the way. One thing that's been established at SEC Media Days is, you know, kind of small talk. I haven't seen some people in a while. Is like, there has never been an off-season news cycle in college sports as like insane as this one. Would we all agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Last year.
Absolutely.
Well,
the Big Ten canceled their season.
I guess I kind of consider that last year and this year. I mean, everything that basically since March 12th, 2020.
I looked through, correct me if I'm wrong, Pete. I looked through the transcript of Sankey today, and I don't believe he was asked about the playoff.
So I missed him yesterday, and I looked through the transcript too. I don't know if he was.
That's how crazy it is. You have one of the four people who designed the playoff that will dramatically alter the way the championship is run. And maybe I missed it, but I didn't see it when I did the transcript. Nobody asked him about it. Like, that's how crazy it is. That's a fairly big topic.
That's a great point. Yeah, no, I think that's like transformational moment for the sport. He had some interesting quotes about enforcement. And he kind of took them to task again. it was sort of him saying out loud what was written in that document that was not leaked to Pat. The document Pat just discovered on his doorstep one day in Louisville. Yeah, it's a little dizzying. There was a lot of like, you know, sitting in those rooms, like listening to all the questions, like there's a lot of name, image and likeness, which is obviously pretty transformative, too. Yeah, there's a lot happening. It's a good time to have a podcast that mocks the sport.
So I understand these are different decisions, different departments, but it's kind of funny listening to the SEC commissioner criticize enforcement at all when one of the SEC schools employs Will Wade.
Well, and Bruce Pearl, too, right?
And we can go down the list, but
we can go down the list.
Bruce isn't on an FBI wiretap. Okay.
He's not, but that investigation is large and vast and contains multitudes.
And they still won't release the report, right?
No, they never released their report.
Yeah. One of the best rivalries in college sports is Auburn compliance versus Pat Forty.
222-0 right now.
I missed my days back in 2020 of actually going into the office like three different times. They're the records office and badgering them.
There's no virgins in this business, but come on now. Well, and then speaking of LSU, somebody dared to ask Coach O about the sexual assault scandals down in Baton Rouge. Kind of terrible reporter, mean, trying to pick on Coach O like that. Who would do such a thing?
Some jerk.
Yeah, Pete asked, and it's an ongoing investigation, Pete. Can't talk about it. It's an ongoing investigation.
Yeah. So before media days yesterday, there's obviously been a lot of institutional issues at LSU. There's been a lot of issues from Les Miles' tenure at LSU. And then there's been issues that Orgeron's been linked to LSU. So it took me a good hour to like redigest everything and sort of contextualize it all. And I mean, what a searing, searing problem at that university. And we should give a lot of credit to USA Today and to the Baton Rouge Advocate that have really done great work in bringing a lot of this stuff to light. And obviously, some of the victims who've spoken out are extremely brave. And obviously, that takes a lot of courage. So that's appreciated. But that has been one of the biggest institutional stories in college sports this offseason, just with everything that's happening in LSU and the tumult there. So I asked Orgeron about it at media day yesterday, and I knew he couldn't comment on an ongoing investigation, and that's always the easy out for anyone who does that. And so I tried to ask something from the broader picture because of the institutional issues and the issues specifically in the football program, if they've changed anything or learned anything. I gave him a chance to maybe be a little bit reflective, and he wasn't holding that tiger. That got shot right down. It was our favorite SEC follow on Twitter, as we've discussed many times on the podcast, is Cecil Hurt, the longtime Tuscaloosa News Alabama writer and one of the wittiest men on Twitter. And he tweeted this: Ed Orgeron has no comment on sexual misconduct allegations in Baton Rouge, but closes with a thanks for asking that had enough acid to poison a 500-pound alligator. In my column on Yahoo about LSU and Orgeron's tenuous future and poor hiring of assistants, I mentioned that he answered as if somebody had poured sour milk in his gumbo. Yeah, it was interesting. That was not a big topic, LSU's tumultuous offseason at media day. So
everybody would rather talk about his alligator shoes, Pete. Come on.
I mean,
if there's one thing that you're going to get at SEC Media Day is an inordinate number of questions on the shoes of the coaches and players. I am way tired with that annual topic.
There's no better encapsulation of Pat Forty than annoyed at SEC Media Days while sitting in Tokyo. He can like channel the annoyance from thousands of miles away.
Still angry.
Well, we were over the Aleutian Islands. I did see, like, you know, the posts about Dan Mullen, the you know, eighth annual posts about Dan Mullen's shoes. It's like, I just don't care what he has on his feet.
You just hate Nike, Pat. Why do you hate Nike so much?
Pat is exhausted.
You and Michael Avenatti.
I don't think anyone hates Nike more than Michael Avenatti.
Yeah.
Thought he was going to get 22.5 out of him. Ended up with 180 months or something.
Yeah, ended up with 22.5 years.
Yeah. There's a month. What do you get? 3 years on that one? I don't know.
I don't remember.
Oh, the Avenatti. It's been a long time ago since I made Pat drink at the airport. And by made, I mean I ordered him a drink, guzzled it down, and then ordered his own. And then
I bet that story he wrote was the best one he's written at SI. Yeah. It just sang.
you know it, man.
Those transitions whistled, baby.
Coming down from a buzz while sitting in an airplane seat. That's some good writing.
That August issue, it's, yeah, it'll just jump off the pages, man.
So Shane Beamer, who Pete glowed about on Twitter, he recreated the classic ball coach pick when ball coach was coaching South Carolina when he went to Arby's.
Oh, right. Yes.
He's really got all the gimmicks.
Oh, he does, man. He doesn't miss a trick. He wins the PR battle every day. We'll see how many football games he wins on fall Saturdays.
But like you can tell Spurrier
just like
really
what Muschamp did. It's very similar.
He looked at his quarterback room and was like, damn, I need to pull out all the gimmicks.
So it's a real setup because in the other one, I'm really analyzing this picture. There's two pictures. So 1 year at media day, they went to Arby's, South Carolina, and Jadeveon Clowney took a picture of Steve Spurrier. It seems to be reaching for a little cup, one of those little cups so he could fill up with horsey sauce or whatever. Beamer is recreating it, but because of COVID, apparently there's no horsey sauce pumps there. So what's that film? How do you say that? I got made fun of by Sarah Krennan, our boss on Twitter, for not being able to say stuff. Never good. Never good when you're in the communication business and your boss is like struggles to speak.
I mean, the good thing is she didn't call you up for mispronouncing the head coach of Clemson's name. She rather just called you up for not being able to say acai.
Yeah.
So like at least like she doesn't know the true depths of your weaknesses, Dan.
She so does. She listens. I'm now nervous.
You should be. You need elocution classes or something.
I can say Shane Bieber. I said it wrong. I can say Shane Beamer.
I mean, that Beamer name, that hasn't been around very long. It's a new guy.
Brand new guy on the block. Who ever heard of these guys?
Yeah.
Did everybody gush?
Just wait till you have to start saying Uyunglele every week. That's going to go well.
Oh, Lord. DJ. DJ is the bailout.
Big DJ.
Thinking about quitting before the season.
You barely got Krzyzewski down in like the late 2000s.
No, I always got Krzyzewski right. I was always good on that one. I just got to put a little effort in. I want to practice. I got plenty of time over here. Plenty of time.
Well, we're waiting for our single cabs to go back to cover anything.
USC has 61 athletes taking part in the games. I'm reading Sully's stuff here. Thank you, Sully, for doing some prep work. I was too busy drinking.
So I have one last football thought, and I always hate to hijack our podcast with football. In taking a look at the SEC, I did read some of Pat's man crush, Phil Steele, on the plane down. And I have a column going this week on Yahoo about this off of Georgia Today. I think the SEC has a bit of a quarterback problem going into this season. So we'll just say this. Dan, who's the best quarterback in the SEC?
I would go with JT Daniels, Georgia.
Pat, would you agree?
When I'm not sneezing, yes, I would agree. I would probably take JT over Matt Corral, I think those two guys are ahead of everyone else.
It said on those forms you had to fill out, did you sneeze? You lied to the Japanese government today.
Yeah, that's it.
You're going to have to go to a Japanese isolation hotel. Seriously, if we get COVID, we have to go to a Japanese isolation hotel. Our regular hotels are 100 square feet. What the hell is this isolation thing?
I think terrified. The bed stands up.
Pat 40 has COVID.
Yeah, there we go. Let's start that.
He was also asleep when we started taping the podcast, and I got to call and wake him up. So
that's correct.
We've been up for a while. It's tough.
Put on my hotel issue pajamas, though. I forgot to mention this.
What
did you
hell?
Get these? Did you get the did you get hotel pajamas?
There seems to be a robe of some sort. I'm not touching that.
No, I'm not touching that. Are you kidding
me? Pajamas? What?
I guess it's like a robe, but it looks more like pajamas, and I am not wearing it. The space is precious enough in this room. I don't need any of it taken up by somebody else's pajamas.
Yeah, other garments. Like, who wore those last?
What the hell? Right?
How would you sleep in someone else's pajamas? That would be the worst way to... What the hell kind of idea is that?
It's a very, very bad idea.
All right. I think that's a good sign that we should end this podcast.
I'll just slip on some other dude's pajamas.
Yeah. It's time to end the podcast. Time for me to crawl back into bed without wearing the Japanese pajamas. Yes.
Pat's going to have not wake up having not remembered doing this podcast. It's going to, I would say it would show up in his feed and he'll be surprised, but Pat actually doesn't know how to use his podcast feed. So it'll show up on Twitter and Pat will be like, oh yeah, I remember vaguely waking up and doing that podcast.
This is the greatest college football podcast that ever had 2/3 of it originate from Japan.
We never even got to 3292, man. The missing guy.
Oh, that's right. You want to tell that story real quick? We had two It started getting weird in the 5-6 hour.
It did start getting weird. So we made it through the spit test.
When you get the spit test, you get a number. And I think mine was 3615 and Pat's was you were 3615 and 15, I was 36,
you were 3660. Yeah.
Okay, so you get this thing and you take your spit test and then you have to sit and wait and they have like this big scoreboard. And when your number comes up, it's like Keno. It's like the boringest Keno game ever. Your number comes up, then you can go find out whether you pass the spit test and whether you have COVID or not. So, you know, it's going along and eventually you start seeing like 3590, 3591 comes up. And they have us bored of all the ones that are like, come pick up your thing. So finally it gets us. We notice 3292 has never gone and picked up his test. So he's 400 people. We're like, what is 3292 doing right now in the Tokyo airport that he's just hanging out for an extra couple hours?
Theorized he made a run for it.
There was no bar open.
Like, no, need a flight attendant. I think he made a run for it. Like, loose. He's with the Uganda weightlifter who just made a run for it. They both.
Maybe he had COVID and just died. 3292 never got his test. And there's hundreds of people came later. That is hours of waiting. I'm dying to find out who 3292 was.
Yep,
then
he's
there
on
was
the
this
lamb.
One woman walking around with a sign saying something in Japanese and then said Baloney Eros, E-R-O-S. Baloney Eros, that's what the word. And I thought Eros was love in like Greek. I took Greek a long time ago. Baloney, of course, is baloney, unless it's something else. I don't know.
It's the international language of cured meat.
And then we don't know what the Japanese word was. That was perhaps the most bizarre sign I've ever.
We spent a little while killing time in line trying to find out who or what Baloney Eros was.
Eros was the Greek god of love, yes.
We found an Instagram account of Baloney Eros. No, I'm kind of pro baloney. I think sure. On this trip, I might be real pro baloney, really. We'll see.
You get that 7-Eleven meat.
That's right.
Baloney Eros. If I play fantasy football this year, that might be my team. What the hell is that? These are two words I never thought would go next to each other. And what was the Japanese word? So many mysteries.
Baloney Eros is what Bo Nix is going to be throwing this year.
I think we need daily pictures on Pat's Instagram stories. Now, again, this is going to test his technological threshold.
No way
I think we
happening.
Need daily pictures of what he buys at the 7-Eleven.
I could do that.
Or at least if you don't put him on Instagram stories, send him to the pod group text.
There you
Pat,
go.
Yes, right.
Pat's Eats.
The 7-Eleven quest.
The 7-Eleven survival, the daily survival kit from 7-Eleven.
Like at the Rio Olympics, my goal was to learn how to order a 6-inch turkey sub or a foot-long turkey sub at Subway in Portuguese. And I almost did it.
Almost. 3 weeks
close.
Later, you almost got it.
I got close. Trinta, there was a tomate. I can't remember all the stuff. My sandwich artists were tremendous. I tipped them well. They kind of were in on it. The fellow patrons, pretty
yeah,
good.
I'm worried we're not going to have that bonding experience on this trip. Unless me and the 7-Eleven counter people.
This is your chance. If there somehow you are allowed to go to 7-Eleven. I don't believe I'm allowed to, but if I can, yeah. This could
be
your
thing. I got that in a beer vending machine in the hall. I mean, I'm not doing that bad here.
Yeah, much better than we thought. All right, let's end this. We're going to be back later this week, though, I think. We got to preview the ACC, Big Ten. And
I'm at a ACC Media Days. We can have a little fodder on that.
But. All right, let's do it. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please subscribe and share with your friends and leave us nice reviews and all of those things you're supposed to do. Talk to you later.